Well, greetings again, friends and brethren. I hope this finds everyone doing great. Today is Sabbath morning, December 25th, 2010. And I thought what I'd do today is take a break from this current series, sermon series, on the Word of the Eternal to Zerubbabel, and take a break from that and just do a separate message today on another topic, although it all kind of ties in. Everything kind of ties in, but just a separate sermon today and taking a break from the sermon series. If you need a title for the sermon today, it is Two Witnesses Against Israel. Two Witnesses Against Israel. Now, before any of you begin to wonder in your heads or minds, I'm not going to be talking about two specific people. I'm talking about two things. Two things that witness against Israel, that will witness and have been witnessing, but will witness more as we proceed into the near future, in the months ahead. So, two witnesses against Israel. If you would, we'll begin in Deuteronomy, the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 31. Chapter 31 of Deuteronomy. We'll begin in verse 1. And it says, "Then Moses went and spoke these words to all Israel." So, first of all, today this message is to all Israel. And that's all the nations of Israel, but also national and spiritual Israel, which specifically is God's people. And as we proceed through this message, you'll see that there is a duality here. That indeed it is for the national Israelites, the physical Israelites, or unconverted Israelites, but also to converted or spiritual Israel, or God's people, God's church as well. So again, verse 1, Moses went and spoke these words to all Israel, and he said to them, "I am 120 years old today. I can no longer go out and come in. Also the Eternal has said to me, 'You shall not cross over this Jordan. The Lord your God himself crosses over before you. He will destroy the nations from before you, and you shall dispossess them. Joshua himself crosses over before you, just as the Eternal has said.'" So what this basically is leading into is that he is presenting Joshua to be inaugurated in his place. That's because he's about to die very soon. In verse 4 it says, "And the Eternal would do to them as he did to Sion and Og, the kings of the Amorites, in their land when he destroyed them. The Eternal will give them over to you, that you may do to them according to every commandment that which I have commanded you." Verse 6, "Be strong and of good courage. Do not fear or be afraid of them, for the Eternal your God, he is the one who goes with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you." And I'll pause from right there. Just want to interject something there that I've many of God's people that I've talked to off and on over the last 25 years, I guess, since the death of Mr. Armstrong, often, you know, conversation comes up about what group they're in or where we're at or whatever, and they always have a similar comment to, "Well, God always says he'll never forsake us," so they feel comforted in that whatever watered-down Church of God that they attend, they feel that God will not forsake them. But as we'll soon see, and there's other many other examples in the Bible that I've researched over the years because of those kind of conversations, where God does say he won't forsake you if you don't forsake him. But if you do forsake God, then yes, indeed, he will forsake you. So let's pick it up in verse 14, dropping down to verse 14. It says, "Then the Eternal said to Moses, 'Behold, the days approach when you must die. Call Joshua and present yourselves in the tabernacle of meeting, that I may inaugurate him.'" I'm in the New King James here. In other words, in the Old King James, it's to just commission him, same thing. "That I may inaugurate him.' So Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves in the tabernacle. And verse 15, "Now the Eternal appeared at the tabernacle in a pillar of cloud, and the pillar of cloud stood above the door of the tabernacle." Now, pause again. This is how God appeared to Moses and the Israelites all down through the time that he was working with them, from the time that he took them out of Egypt. Verse 16, and the Eternal said to Moses, Behold, you will rest with your fathers and this people. Now see, God's letting the people know that Moses is about to die. But listen to what he says here. Behold, you will rest with your fathers, and this people will rise and play the harlot with the gods of the foreigners of the land where they go to be among them, and they will forsake me and break my covenant, which I have made with them. But now, look what happens when they forsake God. See in verse 6, I've noticed, I pointed out where it says that God will not leave you or forsake you. But notice verse 17, Then my anger shall be aroused against them in that day, and I will forsake them, and I will hide my face for them. So is that a contradiction from verse 6, where God says he will not leave you or forsake you? No, because I just read to you in verse 16, what happened first is that the people forsook God. It says again in verse 16, And they will forsake me and break my covenant. So they break that covenant and forsake God. Then he turns and forsakes them. And that's what I've tried to tell people from other groups over the years. But notice in verse 17 again it says, that my anger shall be aroused against them in that day. Now we're going to touch on that phrase again, because Mr. Armstrong taught many times in prophecy, when you see the term in that day, that refers to the end time. Well, we're going to see in a little while that this does refer to the end time. This also was fulfilled historically with ancient Israel. But like I said, there's a duality here, because we're going to see very soon there's a lot of prophecy in these next two chapters. It says, I will forsake them in that day, and I will forsake them, and I will hide my face from them. Well, that's happened. That's been happening for thousands of years from now. And they shall be devoured, and many evils and troubles shall befall them, so that they will say in that day. Well, here we are at a time, approaching a time now, friends and brethren, where there's about to be more trouble, that time of great trouble, a tribulation on this earth, a time of trouble. It's called Jacob's trouble. And it's an unprecedented time of trouble that has never been seen in the history of man, nor shall ever be seen again, as Christ says in the New Testament. So again, it says in the middle of verse 17, And many evils and troubles shall befall them, so that they will say in that day, see, in the end time, Have not these evils come upon us, because our God is not among us? Verse 18, And I will surely hide my face in that day. See, it's that same phrase again, in that day, because of all the evil which they have done, and that they have turned to other gods. Verse 19, Now, therefore, write down this song for yourselves, and teach it to the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths, that this song may be a witness for me against the children of Israel. So as we'll see here, we're about to get to the verse which declares that the song of Moses that he is writing at this time is a witness against Israel. So this is the first witness against Israel that I'm bringing up today on this, the title of this sermon, Two Witnesses Against Israel. So verse 20 says, When I have brought them to the land flowing with milk and honey, of which I swore to their fathers, and they have eaten and filled themselves and grown fat, they will turn to other gods and serve them. They will provoke me and break my covenant. Notice verse 21 now. Then it shall be, when many evils and troubles have come upon them. So this is the time that we're going into, see. This is the time we're going into now. We're in the beginning of sorrows, but the great tribulation is very soon now, friends and brethren. Then it shall be, when many evils and troubles have come upon them, that this song will testify against them as a witness, for it, that song, will not be forgotten in the mouths of their descendants. For I know the inclination of their behavior today, even before I have brought them to the land of which I swore to give them. Now let's take a closer look and pause here a minute at this verse. And we will begin to see some of the duality coming into play. And if you can't see it through this verse, we will certainly see it later on here. But God is saying through Moses here that it shall be, when many evils and troubles have come upon them, that this song will testify against them as a witness, for it will not be forgotten in the mouths of their descendants. Well, looking at national Israel, Americans and Ephraimites or British peoples and other Israelitish nations, they have forgotten. They have long forgotten these words, see, and they have long departed. But God did send an end time Zerubbabel, or an end time Elijah, to restore all things. And so there was a spiritual Israel here in the end time who was taught these things, was taught these ways. We'll see what it's all about here as we begin to proceed and study into this Song of Moses, which is really just a history and a prophecy of God's people, of Jacob. But spiritual Israel has no excuse, because they were taught. They were taught these ways of God, and they've departed from Him. But they should not have forgotten Him, because God restored it in the end time. So again, it says, it will not be forgotten in the mouths of their descendants. Again, I say that national Israel as a whole, and all the Israelite nations, modern Israel, United States and Britain and other some of the European countries, and Canada and Australia, South Africa, France, they have forgotten those ways, see? But the spiritual Israelites have not, God's people, because they've been taught. So, and I add there that they're without excuse as a result. So notice in verse 22, we'll continue on, because a lot of this sermon is revolving around this verse 21. Because why would God say that this Song of Moses, which is in chapter 32, is going to be a witness against Jacob, or against all Israel? Remember, he's speaking there in verse 1 to all Israel. So verse 22, it says, therefore Moses wrote the song the same day. He wrote this song on the same day and taught it to the children of Israel. Then he inaugurated Joshua, the son of Nun, and said, be strong and of good courage, for you shall bring the children of Israel into the land which I swore to them, and I will be with you. So it was, verse 24, when Moses had completed writing the words of this law in the book. So he's writing two things here. He wrote a song, but he's writing the law, the first five books of the Bible, when they were finished. Verse 25, that Moses commanded the Levites who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Eternal, saying, take this book of the law and put it beside the Ark of the Covenant of the Eternal your God. Why? That it may be there as a witness against you. So here's the second witness. See, this is the second thing in the title of this sermon. Two witnesses against Israel. The first one I'm mentioning here is the Song of Moses, and the second one is the book of the law, God's laws. That it may be there as a witness against you. Verse 27, for I know your rebellion and your stiff neck. If today, this is Moses speaking, if today, while I am yet alive with you, you have been rebellious against the Lord, then how much more after my death? Let's pause from reading. I remember some years ago in one or two of my sermons I mentioned here, coming up on verse 29, where this is a parallel to Mr. Armstrong, who is a type of an end time Moses. And the reason why I had said that is because, and it's still true, is because as Moses led the children of Israel out of Egypt in ancient Israel, so God would send an end time messenger, that one, to prepare the way for the return of Christ. And as he prepared that way, many people would be led out of spiritual Egypt, which is sin, see, into the truth and to God's church. So, and same thing as Mr. Armstrong often said, he knew and he feared that after he died that bad things would happen, because he knew that a lot of liberals in the ministry of the church were waiting like vultures for him to die, so they could come back in and water down the truths. So again here, Moses is the same. You have been rebellious against the Eternal, then how much more after my death? Verse 28, gather to me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their hearing and call heaven and earth to witness against them. Verse 29, for I know that after my death, see, you could almost put Mr. Armstrong's name in here, as I mentioned years ago. And also, I discussed that with someone this past week who picked up on that right away. For I know, verse 29, after my death you will become utterly corrupt and turn aside from what? What do you turn aside from? The way which I have commanded you. So here in the end time, pause from reading, here in the end time, what has happened since Mr. Armstrong's death? See, that one faithful man that God used in the end time, after he died, God's people became utterly corrupt and they turned aside from the way. See, that way, and now they've gone many ways. See, as I've said so many times, God has not sent many men in the end time to restore or preach many ways or many gospels. Now, there are many men out there preaching many gospels, different variations of gospels, and teaching many ways, but there's only one true gospel in one way. And God's people turned away anxiously, and here in the end time, spiritual Israel has turned away from the way, turned aside from the way. And then our national Israelites, fellow countrymen, have long since turned away from the true God. But let's look at this verse again, verse 29. For I know that after my death you will become utterly corrupt and turn aside from the way which I have commanded you. And listen to this, and evil will befall you when? In the latter days. So this is an end time prophecy, friends and brethren. In the latter days. Can you get any plainer than that? Because you will do evil in the sight of the Eternal to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands. Verse 30, then Moses, in the hearing of all the assembly of Israel, the words of this song until they were ended. So now we're going to go into chapter 2, which is that song of Moses, as it's called. But as we'll begin to see, there's much duality in here, because we will see throughout this, an overview of this, is that it's history. God is reminding his people of their history, but also, it is a prophecy, and it is for right now, because we're about to go into these times where this, where we're going to see these things take place. So this is something that impacted me when I was studying over this recently. And it just, the more that I meditate on this chapter, chapter 31 and 32, the more that it impacts me, friends and brethren, that this is where we're at right now and what's about to happen to us. And it is an overview or a synopsis or an outline of what God's work is today and what it's going to be from now on. And yes, it may actually tie into what the two witnesses themselves, the actual two men, whoever they are. I don't know who. I'm not going to be presumptuous and say that I know, because I do not. That's for God to determine, not me or any other man or woman on this earth. God will determine it, and he'll do it in his time. However, when you look at this chapter that we're about to read, you will see that it is indeed a synopsis of what these men will be proclaiming to national and to spiritual Israel, who they will be primarily addressing during the Great Tribulation. So, beginning in verse 1 of chapter 32, Moses says here, give ear, O heavens, and I will speak, and hear, O earth, the words of my mouth. Let my teaching drop as the rain, my speech distill as the dew, as raindrops on the tender herb, and as showers on the grass, for I proclaim the name of the Eternal. So what we're going to see here in the first four verses of this chapter as we go, I'm just pausing temporarily here, Moses is on these first four verses is proclaiming and praising the true God. And that's what this is. So verse 3 says, for I proclaim the name of the Eternal. Ascribe greatness to our God. Verse 4, he is the rock. Now pause again. You're going to see this term, the rock, mentioned several times in this chapter. In all but one time, it's a capital R-O-C-K. One time it's a little r, and you'll see why when we get to it. But this R-O-C-K is referring to that God of the Old Testament, that rock who became Jesus Christ. And I mentioned that a while back in a recent sermon. But he is the rock, verse 4. His work is perfect, for all his ways are justice. A God of what? Truth. What truth is that? See, truth, the truth of God. A God of truth and without injustice, righteous and upright is he. Now in verse 5 and 6, as we read it, you'll see this is where God is showing that Israel turned from God. Notice verse 5, that's referring to Israel. Again, we'll pause right there and look back up at verse 29, because it says in verse 29 that they will, after my death, you will become utterly corrupt and turn aside from the way which I've commanded you. So that's, and evil will befall you in the latter days, because you do evil in the sight of the Lord. So this they in verse 5 is referring to them, or Israel that have corrupted themselves. They have corrupted themselves. They are not his children. So they were, but now they've turned away and they're no longer his children because of their blemish. A perverse and crooked generation. Well, can you see that today, friends and brethren, in this nation? Not just the whole world, but all the nations of Israel, and even specifically the United States in Britain. A perverse and crooked generation. Verse 6, do you thus deal, or repay, as it says in the Old Testament, with the Eternal, O foolish and unwise people? See, we've become foolish, see. Is he, talking about that rock or God, is he not your father who bought you? See, Jesus Christ bought and paid for us with his sacrifice. Has he not made you and established you? See, he is our creator. Notice verse 7. In verse 7 and 8 here, what we have is a call to remembrance, to remember your history, Israel, national Israel, and also spiritual Israel. Remember your history, especially spiritual Israel, the ones who are under judgment now. Verse 7, remember the days of old. Consider, see, God's saying remember and consider something. Consider the years of many generations. Ask your father and he will show you, your elders and they will tell you, when the Most High divided their inheritance to the nations, when he separated the sons of Adam, he set the boundaries of the peoples according to the number of the children of Israel. So he's given it a quick overview of the history here of him establishing the not only the nations on the earth, but the peoples of the earth, and specifically Israel, according to the number of the children of Israel. For the Lord's portion, the Eternal's portion, is his people. Jacob is the place of his inheritance. So in these two verses, God is giving his people a call to go back and remember your history. And that's for national Israel and also for spiritual Israel. Well, in the end time, God did raise a man up, Herbert W. Armstrong, and he did write a book called The United States and Britain in Prophecy, which shows not only the prophecy, but the history of Israel, and brought it up to the present point, where God had fulfilled all these prophecies down through the ages of the promises that he had made to Abraham, and how it would be manifested in the end time, with the birthright and scepter nations. So he wrote the book United States and Britain in Prophecy and showed all that history. It was in that is something that this nation was, it was presented to this nation and to the world as a witness, and for the most part they rejected it. It was part of the preaching of the true gospel. It was part of that Ezekiel watchman work that Mr. Armstrong proclaimed. It was part of that Elijah work, which was to restore all things and restore all that lost truth. But for the most part, God's people, nationally and spiritually, and then now, later on, spiritually, nowadays, and in this time, have rejected it. So this is a call for remembering your history. So when the two witnesses come on the scene, they're going to be doing just like Stephen did in the New Testament. When he witnessed before his people, before they stoned him to death, he gave one of the most powerful sermons in the whole Bible. And he began by giving them their history. And then he concluded it with a stern warning and a correction. And then, of course, they rejected it and then stoned him to death. Well, Stephen was a witness, and he was, like I've said many times in some of my older articles, he was a type of the two witnesses, because they're going to do the same thing. And that's what Mr. Armstrong did. He brought us back to our history, showed us where we came from. And then even to the church, he brought us back to the Garden of Eden. Many times he'd go back to the book of Genesis and start there with our very beginning of our history. Always back to the beginning, see? So someone's going to be proclaiming this here. Why do I say that? Because of what it says in verse 21 of the previous chapter, chapter 31. Again, in verse 21, it says, then it shall be, when many evils and troubles have come upon them, that this song will testify against them as a witness, for it will not be forgotten in the mouths of their descendants. So, but it has been for national Israel. But this truth had been taught and has been taught in the end time when it was restored through that end time Elijah, the end time Zerubbabel. Verse 10, he found him, that's referring to Jacob there in verse 9, he found him in a desert land and in the wasteland, a howling wilderness. He's taking us back to the history here. verses 9 through 12 shows that, and how God just chose Jacob from at the beginning. He found him in a desert land, excuse me, and in the wasteland, a howling wilderness. He encircled him. He instructed him. See, he encircled him around. He put his arms around him. It reminds me of that scripture in the New Testament where Christ has said, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem." And he says, "I would love to have been like a mother hen that just gathers her chicks together underneath your wings and put, you know, surround you with your wings for protection. But you would not," Christ says. But anyway, see, again at verse 10, it says, "He found him in a desert land and in the wasteland, a howling wilderness. He encircled him. He instructed him. He kept him as the apple of his eye." See, God is choosing. He chose Jacob. This is Jacob is Israel's name before he was converted. So Jacob is referring to, in prophecy, to unconverted Israel. Well, today, majority of Israel is unconverted. They've long departed from the true God. Notice verse 11, this love of the Father. "As an eagle stirs up its nest, hovers over its young, spreading out its wings, taking them up, carrying them on its wings, so the Eternal alone led him, and there was no foreign God with him." See, at that time, there wasn't. Notice verse 13, because we're going to get into something here that is fulfilled prophecy concerning Jacob, who later became Israel. "He made him ride in the heights of the earth, that he might eat the produce of the fields. He made him draw honey from the rock, and oil from the flinty rock, curds from the cattle, and milk of the flock, with the fat of lambs and the rams of the breed of Bashan." Interestingly, Bashan is in the plains of Bashan in northern Israel. They're at the base, the base lands of Mount Hermon, "with the choicest wheat." Now, who has the choicest wheat of the earth, or has? Well, it's been the United States, see, for many, many years. "With the choicest wheat, and you drank wine, the blood of the grapes." So, we'll pause from here for a moment. I want to just read something from the United States and Britain in prophecy. At least a small section of this, anyway. This is on page 156 of the United States and Britain in Prophecy. Mr. Armstrong says under the subtitle, "How Did We Get It?" And he says, Mr. Armstrong says, "How did we come into the possession of all this vast wealth of the earth? Did we acquire it through our own human wisdom or foresight and energy and ability and power? Of course not." Mr. Armstrong says, "Let Abraham Lincoln answer." And he quotes here from Mr. Lincoln in one of his proclamations from 1863. President Lincoln said, "We find ourselves in the peaceful possession of the fairest portion of the earth as regards fertility of soil, extent of territory, and salubrity of climate. We find ourselves the legal inheritors of these fundamental blessings. We toiled not in the acquirement or the establishment of them," unquote. Mr. Armstrong says again in his proclamation of April 30th, 1863, for a nationwide day of fasting and prayer, this great president said the following, quote, "It is the duty of nations as well as of men to own their dependence upon the overruling power of God and to recognize the sublime truth announced in the Holy Scripture and proven by all history, that those nations only are blessed whose God is the Eternal or Lord. We have been the recipients of the choicest blessings of heaven. We have been preserved these many years in the peace and prosperity. We have grown in numbers, wealth, and power as no other nation ever has grown. But we have forgotten God. We have forgotten the gracious hand which preserved us in peace and multiplied and enriched and strengthened us, and we have vainly imagined in the deceitfulness of our hearts that these blessings were produced by some superior wisdom and virtue of our own," unquote. Well, that was from President Abraham Lincoln that Mr. Armstrong quoted there, and I just wanted to bring that out because here we go back to verse 13, and to some degree this was fulfilled in ancient Israel, except this first part. It says he made him ride in the heights of the earth that he might eat the produce of the fields. Well, ancient Israel didn't fulfill that completely. Now Israel did in the end time, as we reach the zenith of our power in the end time as a result of the promise that God made to Abraham at the zenith of our power, we did ride the heights of the earth. See, we certainly did. We had the choicest wheat, and we were able to always go and help other countries throughout the world that were low on food or in famine. How many times over the years has the United States bailed out or helped other countries? See, but see, those days have come to an end, or some people just can barely see it coming. But I proclaim to you on this day that it is coming to an end and has stopped. But notice verse 15. It says, "But Jeshurun grew fat and kicked." Well, let's pause right there. Jeshurun, if you're not aware of it, is just another name for Israel. You can look it up in the Strong's. It's 3484. It just means upright. But some of your older Bible study helps and Bible guides will show you that Jeshurun was the name that God intended Israel to be. In other words, it was, as Mr. Armstrong used to teach, it was Israel had intended to be the model nation for the entire earth as long as they obeyed God and were blessed, but they soon rebelled, see, and left and turned away from God, and so God wrote them a bill of divorcement. But it was God's intention for Israel to be the model nation for the earth. So Jeshurun means upright, and so that's just, it's really just a symbolic name for Israel and what she should have been, but they didn't fulfill that. They turned away. So notice verse 15. But Jeshurun did what? I love this verse because it really physically and spiritually both shows the state of our nation today and the state of our of spiritual Israel or God's church. Jeshurun grew fat and kicked. In other words, rebelled. You grew fat. You grew thick. You are obese, as it says here in the New King James. Then that's Jeshurun or Israel, he forsook God who made him, and listen to this, scornfully esteemed the rock of his salvation. Well, that's Jesus Christ, and that's exactly what this nation has done. You see many, many teachings of a false Jesus out there, the false gospel and the false Jesus Christ throughout this nation and through the Protestant religion and offshoots of the Catholic religion. But you also now see it in the Church of God and all the splits and splinters of what was once a church that was on track some 24, 25 years ago. Well, now they have also spurned, scornfully esteemed the rock of their salvation, who is Jesus Christ. Notice verse 16, they provoked him to jealousy with foreign gods. See, this applies to national Israel and spiritual Israel, God's church. With abominations, they provoked him to anger. Verse 17, they sacrificed to demons, not to God, to gods they did not know, to new gods, new arrivals. Well, isn't that interesting? See, always some kind of new doctrines, new truths, or new twists and turns. But listen to this. Verse 17 again, they sacrificed to demons, not to God, to gods, this with a little g, to gods they did not know, to new gods, that's a little g again, new arrivals, that your fathers did not fear. Listen to, here's again verse 18, here's that capital rock of the rock who begot you, you are unmindful. Well, this whole nation, see, is unmindful of the true Jesus Christ, but it was that true Jesus Christ was introduced to them in the last century for over 50 years to Mr. Armstrong. But they've not been mindful of that true God, and even God's own people here in the end time are no longer mindful of the true God. Why? Because they've departed from the way, that one way that God revealed and restored to them in the end time. Again, verse 18, of the rock who begot you, you are unmindful and have forgotten the God who fathered you. See, they've forgotten. Our people have forgotten the God. Now here's what's happening now as a result. This is where we're at, brethren. Verse 19. And when the Eternal saw it, he spurned them because of the provocation of his sons and his daughters. And here's what's about to happen. He said, I will hide my face from them. Now that has been happening, but listen. And he says, I will see what their end will be. So here we're coming up on the time of the end. See, we're in the time of the end, but the end of the end is about to come. For they are a perverse generation, children in whom is no faith. Now today you can see that everywhere in this nation, in all the nations of Israel, but even in the very people of God who should know better, who have been taught the true way, they've lost faith. That's one of the major problems of the Laodicean era. That's why Christ says when he returns, will he find faith on this earth? Well, he will, but it won't be in vast quantities, see? Not until after he returns, and then Jacob has been corrected. Notice verse 21. They have provoked me to jealousy by what is not God. See, it's everything in this society permeates. It's all Satan's society, brethren and friends. It's everything but God that this society focuses on. They have moved me to anger by their foolish idols, but I will provoke them to jealousy by those who are not a nation. I will move them to anger by a foolish nation. So here we're seeing, he's talking about when he's going to send the rod of his anger upon us, when he's talking about Assyria, ancient Assyria, and then the modern Assyria, the descendants of them, and we know who that is, modern Germany, is going to lead this European Union, and God's going to use them as a rod of his anger to correct Israel. So we can't take a bad attitude towards Germany, because it's God that's going to use them in his hand as a rod of correction. Verse 22, for fire is kindled in my anger, and shall burn to the lowest hell, and shall consume the earth with her increase, and set on fire the foundations of the mountains. So here this is talking about a nuclear holocaust, if you look at it in the literal terms. And you can see that all through the book of Ezekiel. But notice verse 23, because here we are in a time of trouble that's getting worse and worse and worse, and it's going to get worse until we're literally in the Great Tribulation. Verse 23, I will heap disasters on them. Not just give them a little bit of disaster. He says, I will heap disasters, plural, on them. I will spend my arrows on them. They shall be wasted with hunger, devoured by pestilence, and bitter destruction. I will also send against them the teeth of the beast with the poison of serpents of the dust. The sword shall destroy outside. There shall be terror within. For the young man and the virgin, the nursing child with the man of gray hairs. So here we are, these verses 23 through 27, are an overview or a synopsis of Jacob's trouble. Verse 26 says, I would have said, I will dash them in pieces. So God would have said in his mind, well, I might as well just destroy them. See, I might as well just destroy them. But instead he doesn't. He says, I would have said, I will just dash them in pieces. I will make the memory of them to cease from among men, had I not feared the wrath of the enemy. So the enemy that he sends upon us, is because of that, he doesn't totally destroy us, because he doesn't want them to have the high hand or the attitude that it was their power. Now we'll read on in verse 27. Had I not feared the wrath of the enemy, lest their adversaries should misunderstand, lest they should say, our hand is high, and it is not the Lord who has done all this. So because of the country that he brings upon us to correct Jacob, he won't let them have that attitude. Verse 28. For they are a nation void of counsel. This is talking about Israel again. They are a nation void of counsel, nor is there any understanding in them. Verse 29, oh, that they were wise, that they understood this, that they would consider what? Their latter end. See, they won't stop and consider why all this is happening. They try to reason it around, and then the government tries to institute new policies to try to correct all the things that are going wrong. They won't consider the real root of the problem. Let me pause here, because of what it says in verse 28, they are a nation void of counsel, nor is there any understanding. I want to read from that same section again, from the United States and Britain in Prophecy. I'll just pick right up where I left off there on page 156 on United States and Britain in Prophecy, where I had just finished quoting the quote from Abraham Lincoln. Mr. Armstrong continues, and he says, and because Lincoln saw a nation who had forgotten God, a nation drunk with a success not due to its own efforts, a nation taking all the credit and glory to itself, This great president called upon the nation for a day of fasting and prayer to confess this national sin before God. The fate of the nation hung in the balance when he issued that proclamation. But God heard and answered that great national prayer offensive, and the nation was then preserved. But listen to this, Mr. Armstrong says, but today, the threat of our fate is 1,000 times more seriously hanging in the balance. And today, we do not have a president or a prime minister with the vision, the understanding, and the courage to bring our nations to their knees. Abraham Lincoln knew these great material blessings had not been earned, but had been given to our people by the God of Abraham, Isaac, and of Israel. And we should face the facts today and know that we were given all this vast, unprecedented material wealth because God promised it unconditionally to Abraham. And he promised it to Abraham because Abraham obeyed God, kept God's laws and commandments. The birthright blessing was denied to our forefathers after Moses' day because they refused to live by God's laws. Well, what are we doing today, see? Continue, Mr. Armstrong says, and today God warns us through many prophecies in Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Isaiah, Micah, and many others, I'll pause right there, like the one I'm reading right now, continue, that unless we of this generation repent of our sins and turn to him with fasting and with weeping and with earnest prayer, he will destroy our cities, all of our fortresses, with the foreign sword, that he will punish us at the hand of a cruel one. See, that's that the rod of his anger, Assyria, Germany. And that we shall be invaded, defeated, and reduced to slaves. God help us to heed that warning. That's the end of the reading from Mystery of the Ages, but United States and Britain and Prophecy. That was on page 157. So back to Deuteronomy 32, and again I'll read verse 28, I'll begin there again. For they are a nation void of counsel, nor is there any understanding in them. Oh, that they were wise, that they understood this, that they would consider their latter end. See, why is this happening? Why is Jacob's trouble? Why is the United States coming to its just crumbling and being destroyed? That's what's going to happen very soon, my friends and brethren. It's time to wake up! Notice this, verse 30. How could one chase 1,000 and put 10,000 to flight unless their rock had sold them and the Eternal had surrendered them? Excuse me. For their rock, now here's where it's a little r. It's not a capital R, it's a little rock. Their rock is not like our rock. That's a capital R-O-C-K. So that's their false gods. Their false gods are not like the true God. So and it says even our enemies themselves being judges. So what God did here in the end time, when he magnified and fulfilled those prophecies in Israel, the United States became the greatest military power on the earth. And before that, preceding that, was Great Britain, at the time that the sun had never set on her empire. And then the United States came forth as the leading economic and military power on the earth. And I'm going to read something to you briefly from page 160 of the United States in Britain and Prophecy. It's under the chapter, and now what? The prophecies for the immediate future. But it's just a short section here under the subtitle, We had pride in our power. Mr. Armstrong says, God cannot speak. Before I read that, remember there are scriptures referring to Israel, where God would say that one would send 1,000 or 1,000 would send 10,000 to flight. That's because God was with us, see. And as Mr. Armstrong said, God was with us up until World War II, and that was the last war that we won, technically. We really, really is. Okay, under this subtitle, We Had Pride in Our Power, Mr. Armstrong says, God could not speak about breaking the pride of our national power until after that birthright power had been bestowed. He put our nations in the position of possessing the greatest national power any nation or empire ever possessed. We had great pride in that national power, in our national prestige. I remember hearing President Theodore Roosevelt tell of his pride in that power and how he used it when he was president. The Germans were sending a battleship steaming towards Manila Bay, threatening to take over the Philippines. The Philippines were then a United States possession. President Roosevelt sent the Kaiser a terse note demanding that the German warship immediately be withdrawn. The Kaiser didn't know it then. This is a quote here from Mr. Roosevelt actually said this. He said, "The Kaiser didn't know it then, that I meant it," snapped Mr. Roosevelt. "So I sent another note, only I didn't send this second note to the Kaiser. I sent it to Admiral Dewey in command of the United States Pacific Fleet. It ordered the entire fleet to steam full speed toward the German battleship, and if it did not turn around and go back, to sink it," said Mr. Roosevelt with emphatic force. In those days, before World War I, we had pride in our national power. The next little subtitle here, Mr. Armstrong says, "But we lost it." Mr. Armstrong says, "Today, even listen to this and see if this doesn't make more sense even today than when Mr. Armstrong wrote this. Listen, brethren and friends." Mr. Armstrong says, "Today, even little nations dare to insult, trample on, or burn the United States flag, and the United States, still having power, does no more than issue a weak protest. What's happened to the pride of our power? We have already lost it," Mr. Armstrong says. "We have already lost it. God said, 'I will break the pride of your power,' and he did." Now listen to this. I'm going to add this section here because it does tie into part of the disasters back in verse 23 on. Was about to come upon this nation. Mr. Armstrong says, "Other prophecies reveal we are to soon have soon such drought and famine and that disease epidemics will follow, taking millions of lives." See, brethren, right here in the United States. Yes, in Britain, United States, and other Israelite countries. "Other prophecies reveal we're soon to have such drought and famine that disease epidemics will follow, taking millions of lives. When our heaven is as iron, our earth as brass, we will realize rain does not come down from iron, and an earth hard as brass is not getting rain, will not yielding food." He quotes verse 20 here. He says, "And your strength shall be spent in vain, for your land shall not yield her increase, neither shall the trees of the land." I think he's quoting from Deuteronomy 28. Doesn't say here. He says, "But will America and Britain heed? They never have. Then what? After all that, then what?" Verse 21, "And if you walk contrary to me and will not hearken to me, I will bring seven times more plagues upon you according to your sins." Then again, as in verse 18, is that Hebrew word Sheba, actually in the Hebrew, which Moses wrote, there are not the two Hebrew words, one meaning seven and the other times. There is just the one word Sheba. As explained previously, the word is defined as seven times and also sevenfold. The seven times conveys duration of punishment. The sevenfold, meaning of the same word, conveys the intensity of the punishment. Wow. So that's, I'll stop reading from there, but I wanted to read that part about the pride of our power being broken, because we're going to get going right into that here in just a moment. I'll pick back up in where I left off in verse 32 of Deuteronomy 32. It says, "For their vine is the vine of Sodom in the fields of Gomorrah." Now, Sodom and Gomorrah, what was their problem there? See, well, you can go back and read the history about what was permeating that society. It was so perverted and sick and twisted and overrun with homosexuality. And what do we see happening in this nation today? Their leaders are signing in new bills of rescinding the don't ask, don't tell policy in this, and for the military on what your sexual preference is. And they're advocating, they're just making it a more and more open and tolerant society of the homosexual lifestyle. Well, that's part of what's happening today, brethren and friends. And it's going to come to an end. That's part of one of the many reasons why Jacob is about to go into great trouble. Verse 33 says, "Their wine is the poison of serpents and the cruel venom of cobras." So this verse verses 28 through 35 here is showing why Jacob's trouble. Verse 23 through 27 was showing you Jacob's trouble. And verse 28 through 35 is showing why Jacob's trouble is coming. See, verse 34 says, "Is this not laid up in store with me, sealed up among my treasures? Vengeance is mine." See, God has the power. It's his prophecy. Those treasures are his prophecies to fulfill. Verse 35, "Vengeance is mine and recompense." Look what happens to us, see, and this is happening now. "Their foot shall slip in due time." See, that's what's happening with our great nation. It's no longer great. What you see happening to our nation today, our foot is slipping. See, we're losing that grip of power. We're on our downhill. We're falling. And when you slip, and I've done it many times because I've fallen a lot physically. And so usually my foot slips. And what follows your slipping of the foot? A hard fall. See, "Their foot shall slip in due time." And look what happens. "For the day of their calamity is at hand, and the things to come hasten upon them." So it's coming quickly, and it's going to come hard. Time to wake up, Israel. Spiritual Israel and national Israel. United States and Britain and other countries that are Israelite countries. If you don't know your roots, you better find out what they are. Notice verse 36. This is speaking of God's judgments coming now. "For the Lord will judge his people and have compassion on his servants." See, in time he will. But only when this happens. See, when he sees that their power is gone. See, after their power is gone, our national power, then he will begin to have compassion. But judgment's coming there. "And there is no one remaining bond or free." So let me read that again. "For the Eternal will judge his people and have compassion on his servants when he sees that their power is gone and there is no one remaining bond or free. He will say, where are their gods?" Now his re says, "The rock," that's a little r, where the rock in which they sought refuge. So where's your gods now? This is what he's saying. Where's your gods? All those false Jesuses and those false gospels and those false idols that you worship instead of me, the true God. Where are they now? See, why aren't you being protected? Why aren't you calling on them? Why aren't they saving you? Where are your false gods now? Those little R-O-C-Ks, rocks. So again, verse 37, he will say, "Where are their gods? The rock in which they sought refuge." See, this is the time when some will be in a place of refuge or safety, but the majority will not. Verse 38, "Who ate the fat of their sacrifices." See, they sacrificed to these false gods, these little rocks, the false Jesuses, and they drank the wine of the drink offering. "Let them rise and help you and be your refuge." So the implication there, there is going to be a place of refuge, but there's only going to be a few there. So he's challenging national Israel and the spiritual Israelites, God's people who are caught in the great tribulation. Where's your God now? See? That you've been worshiping and sacrificing to. So now, beginning in verse 39, God introduces and declares himself. See how this is going to be an overview, see, of God's work. And it's also a synopsis and overview of what the two witnesses, it's like a guideline for the two witnesses' testimony. Because they're going to be declaring the law of God. And this song of Moses is a history and a prophecy of God's people. Verse 39, "Now see that I, even I, am he." This is God speaking, see? "And there is no God besides me." See, he just got through asking him, where are your gods? They're not helping you. Now he's going to introduce and proclaim himself. "Even I am he, and there is no God besides me." Will you now see that? Now that your false gods have not come to save you? That there is only one God, a true God, and only one way to worship him? Listen to what he says. "I kill and I make alive. I wound and I heal. Nor is there any who can deliver from my hand. For I raise my hand to heaven and say, as I live forever, if I whet," or in other words, sharpen, If I sharpen or whet my glittering sword, and my hand takes hold on judgment, I will render vengeance to my enemies and repay those who hate me. I, God says, will make my arrows drunk with blood, and my sword shall devour flesh, with the blood of the slain and the captives, from the heads of the leaders of the enemy. But now here we are to verse 43, the last verse of this Song of Moses. And now, the good news. See, this is the good news. Because it begins with repentance of that great multitude that comes out of the great tribulation. And those are from many nations, including Gentiles. And also with the return of Jesus Christ. Notice verse 43. Rejoice. Now how, after all this time of calamity, how can you rejoice? Because if, for those who understand God's plan, and many will understand it by then, those that are alive or that survive will understand, and those that are repenting. Rejoice, O Gentiles, with his people. See? Not just Gentiles, but with his people, Israel. For he will avenge the blood of his servants and render vengeance to his adversaries. And here comes the wonderful part. He will provide atonement. What does that mean? We should know what that means. We observe the Day of Atonement every year. What does that represent? The final at-one-ment with God. That's what Jacob's trouble leads to, finally. They can be one with their God because they refused, with their stiff-necked, rebellious attitude for thousands of years, to humble themselves under the mighty hand of God. But when they finally do, see, God has to correct them severely, our people. And when they finally do, they can be at one. He will provide atonement or at-one-ment for his land and his people. What a beautiful, beautiful ending that is, because that is where all the hope lies, friends and brethren. See, God always, it always ends with good news. It's like Mr. Armstrong said many times, there's good news coming, but before that good news, there's some bad news. And this is where we're at right now, friends and brethren. It's about to begin and come on the world scene. So I'm going to continue reading just a couple of more verses here for some emphasis, because there is some things we need to pay attention to here. Notice verse, we'll just read on verse 44, but that verse 43 was the end of the Song of Moses, but verse 44 says, so Moses came with Joshua the son of Nun and spoke all the words of this song in the hearing of the people. See, all the words. Verse 45, Moses finished speaking all these words to all Israel, and he said to them, listen, set your hearts on all these words. So pay attention to this. That goes for me too, but all who are listening here. Set your hearts, my friends and brethren, fellow Americans, fellow Britons, fellow Israelites, set your hearts on all these words, which I testify among you today, which you shall command your children to be careful to observe all the words of this law. So here's those two witnesses. See, all those words he spoke, which was this Song of Moses, but also all the words of this law. Listen, verse 47, for it is not a futile thing for you. Why? These words, setting your heart on these words? Because it is your life. That's pretty important, don't you think? It is your life. And I'm talking here eternal life. That's what God is saying. It is your life. And by this word you shall prolong your days in the land which you cross over the Jordan to possess. So there's a physical blessing here for heeding these laws. If Israel would only have done it, but they didn't. I just read to you from the United States and Britain in prophecy. Mr. Armstrong was talking about United States and Britain, but will they heed? And he said, well, they never have. And they're not heeding right now, and they will not heed. That's why Jacob's trouble is coming. But God puts a lot of emphasis on the purpose of the law and also the Song of Moses, because it is a history and a prophecy of our people. And God says right here in verse 46, set your hearts in all these words which I testify among you today, and teach your children to be careful to observe all the words of this law, for it is not futile, because it is your life. But it's important because also back in verse 21 of chapter 31, and I'll read it again, that it shall be when many evils and troubles have come upon them, that this song will testify against them as a witness. It is a witness. And it hasn't been because it's been forgotten by the national Israelites. It shouldn't have been forgotten by God's people in the end time, because they were taught God's law. They were taught the history of Israel, the physical Israel, national Israel, and they were taught our future through the prophecies of this book, the Holy Bible, through that end time Elijah, that Zerubbabel, who God used to lay the foundation and to restore all things. So God's people, God's spiritual people, are without excuse. The national people have yet to wake up and repent and have their opportunity. And that's what one of the purposes of Jacob's trouble is about, this coming tribulation. So God can correct and finally bring his people to their knees before the great God. So this has been just basically an overview of this. There's a lot more that I wanted to add, but I'm going to cut it a little bit short for sake of time. But I hope it's something you can meditate on. Go back and read and reread chapter 31 and chapter 32, especially the song of Moses, and meditate on what was discussed today. And it's brought tears to my eyes several times just meditating on it. And I think there's going to be a lot more coming out of this as far as what's going to happen in our immediate future. And if we have any spiritual common sense, then we, hopefully you all do. You should be able to see that, what's coming. So anyway, I hope it's been helpful, something to meditate on, to pray about, to think on. And there's a lot in God's Word that he's showing us. And it's coming alive, friends and brethren. So I hope this has been helpful and also encouraging, because it does lead to the greatest news this earth has ever heard or seen. So until next time, do take care. I love you all.